The information provided on Dr. Tom Rozelle Live by Dr. Tom Rozelle, D.C., interview guests, show co-hosts, or substitute hosts is not intended or implied to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. It is for general information purposes only. Information from this broadcast should not replace the appropriate consultation and examination process by a licensed physician. Always consult your own physician prior to changing any current medical directive or prescription.
Dr. Tom Rozelle Live, right now. On 105.9 FM, WMAL.
Welcome to Dr. Tom Rozelle Live. This is Dr. Tom Rozelle Live in studio, waiting to take your calls on your health. Give us a call, 888-630-9625. That's 888-630-9625. You know, this is a very special program. It's one that we're going to dedicate the entirety of the program to what's on all of our minds, and it's the coronavirus. We're here in studio, and my colleague, Dr. Scott Lamp, is sitting here with me. And, you know, we've talked about it the last several days in the office, and I said, Scott, let's go in and do the program together, and let's really look at what's going on and kind of pick it apart. And people are so hyped up. They're so over the top right now. Nobody knows for sure what the truth is. And we're going to try to give you a little bit more of the truth and try to do a little comparative analysis so you really understand what it is that you can do for yourself. How, you know, should you be afraid or shouldn't you be afraid? You know, what's going on? The world is locked down. On the way to the studio today, it looked like, you know, we were coming up to the thrones of Armageddon. There was nobody on the road. So everybody's being, you know, socially responsible and being locked down in place and so forth and so on. But do you need to be fearful? Do you need to be over the top? You know, this is going to pass like anything else, but we really need to talk about, you know, what it is, what's going on, how it began to progress, why the Italians above anybody else are so sick and having such a large manufactured process and problem because of this. And I said manufactured on purpose. That wasn't a slip, because there's certain things that they did that they should have known better, but they didn't do it. And we're going to talk about that as well. Is this a serious condition? The answer is absolutely yes. Is it something that we should be so fearful of that, you know, we lose our capacity as human beings? And the answer is no. If you have questions as we go through, if you have, you know, any directive that you'd like to know about, please give us a call, 888-630-9625. We'd love to have your opinions as well. Dr. Scott,
yeah.
You know, thanks for, you know, coming out today. You know, we're here, we're in studio, we're in the office all week long too. We're treating patients,
yeah.
And we're following CDC guidelines, and we're separated. You walk in the office and you notice that
maybe
we have
chairs right
we
now.
Have chairs. That's right. We need more chairs. And we have the door propped open. We have all kinds of bug killers all over the place. We're wiping down constantly. And even this week, we'll start doing some temple scanning. We had thermometers, and we're checking people out, and we're doing with thermographic imaging as well. And so we're being very cautious about what we do, but we're here to help, and we do know that the work that we do, you know, the government of Virginia has declared you know, what we do as primary care, and we want to make sure that we're there to serve you in every way that right. we possibly can. Let's start with the basics, Dr. Scott. You know, we've both been at this, you know, in practice a lot of years.
Yeah.
And, you know, we've seen a lot of things come and go. We've lived through the swine flu, you know, some years ago, 2009. And, you know, we've lived through flu seasons that have been ridiculous, and we're seeing this situation. Never before have I seen people react at a high level of such paranoia
right.
than now. Why? What's your knee jerk on this?
That's a loaded question.
It is.
I think that first off, when we talk about fear, common sense a lot of times can go out the window. And I think that's one of my concerns. Like, and I told you, I had two patients just recently. I'm just talking them off the ledge. When we have an element of fear, and we're in flight or flight response, and we're trying to run away from something or fight something, we don't think well. It's not time for critical thinking. And a lot of times people are just like knee-jerk reaction, like you're talking about, knee-jerk reaction. Oh, my God, oh, my God, oh, my God. You got to sit back, step back, have a plan of action, take a look at what's going on there, take a deep breath, relax, and try to figure out what the best ways are. And I'm going to give you an example. I had a patient that had a parent that had a pulmonary problem. They were supposed to go in for a checkup. And then she was freaking out because of the fact that, oh, I got to take this patient. I don't know what I can do. And I said, well, if he's healthy and he's not having problems, then what can you do? You can always call the doctor's office and say, hey, I can, maybe can postpone the visit or see what's the importance of the visit because it's just a checkup. So there's a lot of things you can think through that. Or ask them on how their sanitary elements are. Are they cleaning up and doing things pretty well? Then maybe you won't be able to take them in. So I think you need to take a look at everything, calm down, breathe, take a look at. You got to get oxygen to your brain and kind of think through things and make plans. I think people are not making plans on stuff. They're just, like I said, knee-jerk reaction. I'm going to buy all the toilet paper I can possibly find.
To this day, I don't understand that, but somebody will enlighten me at some point about why, but that's neither here nor there. They're going to continue making toilet paper.
I heard you can buy it on the corner, with a little bit of Prel.
That's right. You just black market.
With a Benjamin, yeah.
the whole situation is that if you think through this, I'm going to give you a little bit of comparative study. In this country, in the United States, we lose up to about 59,000 people from the regular old flu every year because people are immunologically compromised. And those are statistics you can take a look at. Some years it drops down and some years it really cranks up. And it depends on a lot of things. Go ahead, Scott.
Yeah, and I think when you talk about immunologically compromised, what does that mean? That means, do I have asthma? Do I have a pulmonary problem? COPD, diabetes, cardiovascular diseases, things of this nature. And so those are a lot of diseases.
It's true. And this situation, and I went in and I tried to find, why is this so different? The projected death rate to the flu is less than 1%. The projected death rate from coronavirus is about 1%. So, yes, there's going to be more people, but this is a virus that does go after the respiratory system.
Right.
So when you have people who have COPD, who've had bouts of pneumonia, who have lung compromise issues from any number of different things,
right,
and their immune system has tanked and degraded over a period of years, they're going to be much more susceptible to this and other types of situations.
And what are they dying of? Pneumonia.
They're dying of pneumonia for the most part.
It's getting
yes.
into those spaces, in between those small spaces, and those are the keys to the, again, it's not moving fluid well through those areas.
We're talking about the coronavirus, and we're trying to shed some light on this so you all understand that this is a serious situation like so many other things that happen to us over a period of time. When you go back to 2009 and you take a look at the swine flu, the numbers of people that died in this country were huge as compared to this particular bug. Why do we have so much attention on this as compared to then? Because they were equally devastating. And so you can look, and I don't want to spend too much of the program. You've heard me talk about it over the last few weeks. I want to talk about what you can do. We're going to, second half of the program, we're going to talk about what you can get done, what you can do, how you really should be reacting. Does that mean you should go out and get into large groups? No, we're all going to follow the CDC recommendations. But the point of it is, and Dr. Scott was just talking to you about, is that when you go into fight flight, when you go into overreaction, when you go into a situation where you're running away from the tiger, your immune system begins to tank. I had a patient today that sent me a text message and said that there were some herbs out there that actually caused things to get worse and increase the cytokine, which is an inflammatory component.
A storm, yeah.
And it causes things and makes it worse. And, that caught me by surprise, not the patient, but the article that she was referencing. It came from somebody who was a non-physician, a non-medical anything. And I checked it out, and it just flies in the face of everything we're going to talk about in the second half, and why there are certain herbal preparations that are really strong and will modulate the cytokine inflammatory reaction that's affecting the lung. See, what's happening with this coronavirus is the lung tissue swells. Mm-hmm. and it makes it much more difficult to breathe, and they can't seem to dampen it. Well, there are things that you can do to control that in the beginning stages, so you make yourself less susceptible. And we're going to talk about those dietary things that you need to avoid. We're going to talk about getting a little exercise and calming yourself. And there's a couple apps that you can use. And we're going to add all those things in today. And so you really understand this particular bug. Dr. Scott, let's talk about what this thing really is. You know, what is this coronavirus? How did it begin to come about? You know, what's your data? And I'm going to fill in some of the things that I have.
Well, you probably have a little bit more data than I do. But as far as understanding it, I mean, I don't want to get into some of the other conspiracy theories that might be out there.
No,
right?
This isn't the platform
for that kind of thing. I think when you talk about Wuhan, which is supposed to be where this is supposed to have started up from that, you take a look at what's the environmental factors. And a lot of times you got to look at really strongly what the environmental factors are. There's a lot of chain smokers there in Wuhan, especially in between males. A lot of pollution that's going on there. The question is how quality is the quality of care that's there. So if something gets out, from example, whatever that marketplace is, and they say there was possibly coming from some type of animal, from bats to snakes, you've heard all I've had anteaters and those kind of things. And it's also interesting right now, I think what they've done is they've plowed over that area. You can't go to that marketplace, it doesn't exist anymore, to try to take care of it. But you know, it started off there, it transferred, and I think, again, the environmental factor that plays a part in it is making it, you know, more susceptible to, but our bodies were more susceptible, at least those bodies are more susceptible to get to these kind of things.
You know, in Italy, we're seeing this exponential rise in cases and deaths and so forth, and the question becomes, why is that? How come? Why is it in Italy? Why are they so susceptible? And when you start picking it apart, I was on the phone texting my cousin today, who has been texting our other cousins in Italy. And basically what's happening, and it's on the rise, there's no doubt about it, is that it's broken out in the north. So here's some correlations. The northern portion of Italy is where any kind of manufacturing that still exists in Italy takes place. So the textile mills are up there. So the Italians decided that, you know, for cheap labor, they were flying in Chinese laborers to run the textile mills. Well, the Chinese laborers came from Wuhan province.
Right.
Interesting, right? And even when it broke out in China, the Italians did not stop the back and forth of these workers going home and coming in. And so subsequently, you know, they were spreading the contagion. Now, Italy has a lot of older people because the younger people, there's very little manufacturing and production and work and so forth that's in Italy, and they're out of the country. So we have a society that is quite old, and Italians smoke for whatever reasons. They haven't learned that they shouldn't smoke, so their lungs are compromised. So again, I'm projecting based on the things that we know that why this may be so exponentially worse in that area, but you take a look and you start dissecting what's taking place. And when we come here in the United States, we're seeing that certain people are dying, and it goes directly to their immunological systems. Are they compromised? Are they not compromised? Their dietary patterns and so forth. And we're going to talk about that a little bit more. We're going to get into this in the second half of the program. We're going to teach you how to build your immune system. But please understand that from a place of reaction comes nothing that is supportive. We're in our practice, we're treating every day, we're making sure that our patients have the best that we can provide for them, and we want to give you the same data and the same information. We're coming up to a break. We're talking about the coronavirus. Dr. Scott Lamp and I will detail a little bit more. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
Washington's Mall, 105.9 FM, WMAL, where Washington comes to talk.
Welcome back, everybody. Dr. Tom Rozell here. We are in studio. It's the coronavirus time. And we're here actually with Dr. Scott Lamp, and we're talking about this bug and what it really is. And, you know, should you be afraid? Should you not be afraid? It's a serious situation, but the panic that is in our society today is not okay. You know, let me just give you a little other data on the coronavirus. We started doing a little comparative between the flu and the coronavirus. Well, the flu every year, somebody who gets it, right, or somebody who's a carrier spreads it to about 1.4, 1.5 other people. The coronavirus spreads it to about two others, two and a half. So there's, you know, a little bit more susceptibility to this thing. This thing is designed to go after and attack the respiratory system. And so those are kind of reasons why this thing is a little bit more contagious, if you will. But we're going to talk about that in a little bit more. But there's been a gentleman that's been holding. Our number here is 888-630-9625. We're going to talk about the symptoms. And basically, by the way, the symptoms are just like any other flu. It's, you know, you've got, you know, a dry cough instead of a productive cough. You have, you can get a fever. You can get a cough that, you know, that seems to hurt deeply instead of, as well as it just being dry. You can get diarrhea. And that's one that they haven't talked about. But we're going to talk about a little bit more of the symptoms in just a second. But, Kenneth, how can I help you? Thank you for being patient.
Well, you're welcome. I think you actually answered my initial question because I'm one of the calm ones, and I'm upset the way everybody is freaking out. But I wanted to ask about why people are getting so upset about this virus and not the influenza virus, which has killed, what, 29,000
already
in the last 5 months.
Yeah.
But so I'll change it to this. My question now would be, how realistically, what people don't understand and why they're getting so scared is they're acting as though there's like nuclear fallout in the air, and they're expecting that they're going to be locked up in their houses for 2 to 3 months. And that's why they're running to the stores and raiding all the toilet paper. Realistically, does anybody have a kind of a concept of how viruses work and how they die off, or how quickly this might pass, or how long it might take?
Yeah, absolutely. Let me handle that for you, Ken. I appreciate it. So, listen, here's the deal. Viruses have a lifespan relative to ebbs and flows. They mutate like crazy. This one is going to be no different. It will mutate, and it'll turn into something else. And some years, it's going to be around. Coronaviruses, by the way, are basically what all flus are. Yeah. And these coronaviruses affect different things because of their mutation patterns. So the flu is spread the same way. It's spread by droplets. It's spread by kissing people. It's spread by touching things and touching your face. The same exact patterns exist across the board. This is no different than the flu. It's just a little bit more contagious, and it zeroes in on the lung tissue, the respiratory system, more so than other parts of the body, but also the intestinal tract. Now, why the guts if this is supposed to be so dangerous to the lung? Well, in Chinese medicine, by the way, since we're talking about something that seems to be originated over there, the lung and the intestinal tract are coupled organ systems. They're yin and yang, positive and negative to each other. So one can affect the other and vice versa. So we're freaking because we've been told that we're going to isolate because the rate of infection is a little higher, but the projected death rate isn't, you know, is a little bit more than that. But, Dr. Scott, you know, you see people who are checking out. They're much older, correct?
Yes. And, again, you're looking at what the thing is. We like to see what the mean averages of people that are dying and who they are. And, again, we talked about that before, about what do they have? What are the problems? I mean, you got a lot of people over the age of 80. And, you know, what my concern is here is when we're talking about how to take care of this, and then, Tom, we talked earlier before, the body's very dynamic. It's supposed to be moving. Fluids are supposed to be moving. And I think the whole answer to a lot of the things we're going to be talking about on the take care of this is your body a cesspool or is it a moving or flowing river? And, you know, you get people in nursing homes that are laying there. They're not moving their fluids. There's something called lymphatics we'll get into that talk about that break up and dice up some of these bacteria and viruses, get them into lymph nodes, break them up, process it's part of our immune system. But if that's not moving, it's not happening. But that means, do I need to be breathing? Do I need to be exercising? Do I need to stay away from things that might cause inflammation? And inflammation is a big part of this. Inflammation is part of every major disease. It backs things up.
I think this is a compounded situation. We're going to get into it. You know, between October and the beginning of March, there were approximately 670,000 people that were hospitalized due to the flu. So economically, this is a huge burden. So now we have another bug on top of that. So maybe across the board, it's a control piece to handle that type of situation. We're going to talk about that a little bit more when we come back after a break. We're coming up to the middle of the program. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
Dr. Tom Rozelle Live continues now on 105.9 FM, WMAL.
Welcome back, everybody. Dr. Tom Rozelle here. We're talking about the coronavirus. Scott Lamp, Dr. Scott Lamp is in the studio with me. And, you know, we've been in the practice all week. We're treating patients as usual. We're taking care of them. We're supporting, you know, everything that they need to have. And what I want you to know about the coronavirus is that people are getting well. And I wanted to do a little comparative. And before we ended the last half of the program, I said that maybe, you know, this lockdown, maybe, and this is just Dr. Tom, you know, projecting, it has to do with a lot of economics because it's costly to treat people. And last year's flu season, the 2019 flu season, was the worst in quite some time. And it estimated that up to 43 million people got sick during that flu season, and 647,000 people were hospitalized, and 61,000 people died. Interesting. So when you look at that on an economic basis, that's huge, right? So when you look at what's happening now and you compound that on top of everything else, and then the year before, by the way, and one data I wanted to give you, the year before in 2018, 79,000 people died of the flu. So those are huge economic numbers. And now you have this one that is going to be maybe equal to, you know, a bad flu season. But is this the reason we're locking it down? I don't know. And that's maybe to answer Ken's question, and we're here, by the way, at 888-630-9625 if you have specific questions on this. But this flu season, this influenza A and this influenza B viruses and so forth, you know, they run their course, and just like this will run its course as well. But what I want to get into right now is, you know, the things that we're actually telling our patients and the things that you can do to help protect you, your family, and so forth. Obviously, locking yourself down and not being exposed to anybody has some merit, but, you know, it's going to have a catastrophic effect as it is worldwide on the economic platform that has been so good for so long. Mm-hmm. Dr. Scott, let's talk about, we promised in the second half of the program, we would talk about, you know, what to do about this thing. Do we need to get in a corner and hide? Or are there things that we can actually do that make sense and things that we can support ourselves with, both environmentally, things that we can take? What's your take on this thing?
So like we usually do in our mantras in our office, the structure, chemistry, and emotion, all three of these play a big part in what we're looking at. Now, let's talk about the physical element. What can I do to make things move in my body better? I talked just before about like the body being a cesspool or a raging river. Which one do you want to be? You want to be the raging river. You want to get things moving. So learning to take deep breathing exercises, and there's all kinds of those out there. There's all kinds of different exercises. There's a 4-7-8 breathing program by Andrew Weil, who talks about some of those things, about getting things in, getting the oxygen. What you're trying to do is fill in those small corner reaches of the lungs, get the diaphragm to drop all the way down. When you do that, you move and clean out those areas, you get blood circulation, maximize them to those places, you are actually moving fluids through. Stagnation is not where we want to be at. We want to be moving things through it. So deep breathing exercises, doing it once or twice a day. And that kind of carries over to the emotional state, because they talk about deep breathing, kind of relaxing the body down in something that they call, big term, parasympathetic, but it's flight or rest and digest. You've got to be able to rest the body down so you get some clear thinking. If you're sitting there panicking, you're going to do things like, you know, what happens when we absolutely get panicked out of our minds? Do we go to the thing that, what's the soccer riots sometimes that happens? And they actually have had cases where people run over somebody else and they don't even know they ran over that person. if you go back to ask them, because they're in such a survival mode. We've got to be more critical thinking. We've got to be taking a look. We have some compassion. We've got to think about sometimes some of the things that are happening with our neighbors and be able to communicate with them to make sure you can coordinate things. So the breathing aspect on the physical element is extremely important. With that said, exercising and moving.
By the way, there's an app for that. It's called Breathe.
Breathe, that's right.
It's free.
And there's a lot of different breathing techniques. I can go over some things. And there's another one called the Buteyko method, learning how to breathe through your nose and get better oxygenization. If you're doing a lot of mouth breathing, you're not breathing correctly. You want to be working on breathing through your nose. And there's a whole, I mean, I could probably do another talk on just the elements of that. But when we go out and walk, and we walk with good stride, with good purpose, the movement of the body when we stride forward, back and forth, and the rotation of our pelvis, that if you go a little bit longer stride, actually opens up your digestive, your thoracic, your rib cage. It opens it up. You breathe better. You got to move. So these are physical things that you can do. If you get stuck inside, then stretch it out a little bit more on the treadmill maybe. Do some of those. And then the other thing is a major factor that we have in our office. We talk about some of the five factors of things that affect our bodies. The other one is called lymphatics. This is a system that's a passive system. And I just said passive.
It doesn't have its own work.
It doesn't have its own work. You got to work to make it work. Now, what does this thing do? It actually collects the garbage. It's the sewer system of the body. Are you going to let it sit or are you going to move it? And there's different ways to do lymphatics. I think, Tom, the one I like to tell patients to do is bouncing, just easy bouncing. And, you know, you got to be careful. Like, you know, again, if you're an elderly person or something like that, I want to make sure you're not a fall hazard or whatever. But if you go to a corner of a room and you can put your arms up on both sides to brace yourself, go up and bounce a little bit on your feet for 3 or 4 minutes. Open that up. It actually moves things flowing. This is like garbage being moved, and you're moving some of that garbage into the lymph nodes. And these lymph nodes are breaking things and irritating and breaking things down and grinding down some of these bacteria and viruses for our benefit, so eventually they can get out of our systems. But if you don't move, it doesn't happen. So this is something you can do 2 to 3 times a day. Every time you move lymphatics. You can move them a little bit more by doing a little bit of bouncing. There used to be the old rebounder.
That's right. The thing worked very, very well.
Yeah, and I think it was used for the wrong purposes about 20 years ago. But again, be careful because you're bouncing off something. And somebody's elderly, you got to be careful. You got to have some type of means. You've got to be able to hold yourself. I don't want you falling over. You could actually even get like a therapy, like a PT therapy ball, and sitting on the ball and kind of bounce a little bit. But again, don't fall off of it.
Well, as you said, breathing is critical. A little bit of muscle tone is critical. And drinking lots and lots of water. So many of you think that water's for washing, and which we need to wash a lot during this coronavirus and flu season and every other season. But you need to move the lymphatic channels with water and coffee and teas and so forth. Yeah. Don't do that. You have to have fresh water. By the way, put a lot of lemon in and don't make it cold.
Yeah.
Make it slightly room temperature or warm, and you'll have a big difference.
What's a sewer system without water?
Stink and rats and infected and bugs and things of that nature.
Or if it's backed up, it's also a similar problem, but you want to make sure it goes. I think what I've been telling people recently is doing about 20 ounces to start off your day, just in the beginning, start off the day. The problem is when we're trying to do, we talk in the office about half the body weight in ounces. The problem with that is if we wait till the end of the day, we're like, I don't want to drink water at the end of the day because I'm going to be, going to get waking up and going to the bathroom. Get it started early. We're coming out of detox when you're sleeping. As you come out of detox, drink some water. Get some water right there. Start off with about 20 ounces. I've already had my 35 so far.
Quit bragging.
Okay.
No, I'm close behind you. Now, let's get into a little bit. You have to do those things. You have to calm yourself. You have to get lighthearted. As soon as you start pulling back, as soon as you start becoming fearful, as soon as you become, exponentially, oh my God, your immunological reactions die down. Now, let's get back to what this thing is really doing, right? Here's the situation. When you have anything that affects the immunological systems of the body, and you have fever, and you have body ache, you have diarrhea, you have, a cough, you have difficulty breathing, there's an inflammatory response that takes place. And part of that inflammatory response is something called a cytokine surge. And it's a natural process that the body needs to heal with, but it gets out of control.
Mm-hmm.
Subsequently, you need things that will modulate that cytokine reaction. Now, you can, it has a lot to do with other things called interleukins, right?
Right.
Interleukin 6, which is will cause all kinds of pain in the body. Interleukin 8 is more of an inflammatory response modulator. And you can look all this stuff up, by the way. And just, you know, you can read and read and read. So the point of it is there are things that make a difference. I said earlier that a patient had texted me earlier today and asked me about an article that she was forwarded that the interleukin, the cytokine response was enhanced by things like echinacea, if you will, and bilberry and so forth, which are things that have been used typically forever to modulate inflammatory reactions, and they've been known very well to handle most, if not all, viruses, not to kill them, but to allow your immunological system to respond to them.
Right.
So vitamin C and vitamin D and zinc, echinacea, NAC, bilberry, and so forth, all these things are used to bring up your immunological responsiveness, if you will. It doesn't kill it, but there's some interesting articles that are coming out with vitamin C. Intravenous IV vitamin C seems to have allowed some people to get over some very severe cases of this coronavirus within 2 to 4 days. And most people now, you know, hospitalizations for the flu is 4 to 5 days. The coronavirus seems to be double that.
Right.
But if that's working, and we know that vitamin C causes an increase of interferon response in the body, interferon goes after any viral pattern, then there's some sense to this. And now we have some other things that are out there as well that are taking place that make a difference.
I think some of the things that people die from this is sepsis. And one of the things that's supposed to be work really, really well with is the intervention of an IV drip of vitamin C, which is extremely important. I think when we look at things like even like vitamin D, does it hit the virus directly, or does it actually modulate everything else around it and bring up the immune system to a way, but it doesn't create the storm? And that's what kind of some of the research is saying with vitamin D. Also, there's cofactors for making things go through. So vitamin D, vitamin A, and K make that go work, that system work a little bit better. So there's some adjuncts to some of these things that we take that are very, very important. K2 plays a big part with that too, in regards to trying to get that vitamin D to where it needs to get to in certain places, and cleans out the system. So there's ways to kind of put things and work, they kind of co-work together.
You know, the interesting thing, if you look at a map of where the greatest numbers of this virus is, and any flu and any virus, you're going to see that they're greater at certain latitudes. The northern areas are going to be worse because vitamin D levels are so low.
Right.
And if you keep that in perspective, and you really look at this thing for what it is, you ask the question, why are people's immunological systems so low? In the United States, we end up eating so much sugar, and subsequently our immunological responses are much lower because of that. That's a known fact. It puts your white blood cells to sleep. And by the way, if you know, you can give our office a call and say, hey, listen, you know, are there things that even if, you know, you're not a patient that you can recommend to us that, you know, that would help bring up immunological response? We'll ask you a couple quick questions, and there are things that we can do to help you as well.
Yeah. Again, we go back to fluids moving to the body, things flushing out. Anything that you do to actually cause an inflammatory reaction, you're now blocking those channels. And I think, you know, we haven't brought up milk and gluten, but I think there's a lot of people that have a sensitivity to that. The mucus production gets thickened. The viscosity of the fluids moves as well, especially with ice cream and milk and products like that. So what you're doing is now leaving it in an area for something to kind of grow in. You want to take the advantages away from this virus. Don't add more to it, so that backs up. So anything that does a flow like that creates a problem. We talk about vitamin C, which has some amazing results all over the board. Number one, it raises white blood cell count.
Correct.
Okay? It affects viruses.
Yes.
Right? Does it help people with stress?
Absolutely.
On the adrenal gland?
Absolutely.
It helps with the liver, which is detoxification. Look at how the different things that vitamin C plays a part. That's extremely important to keep things through. But also, don't keep feeding the body like a ton of sugar because sugar will actually turn around and actually reverse the aspect of the white blood cell and bring it down.
Let's take a quick call. John, you've been sitting there for a long time. Unfortunately, we're going to make it real short. How can I help you, sir?
Yeah, I really enjoyed the discussion. Love your radio program and all. I think this has really forced us to take a look at some really good health habits, like you've mentioned, exercise, vitamin C, you know, vitamin D, diet, getting outside and getting some exercise. And you know, I developed something I call the island workout. Sounds pretty cool, huh?
Yep. And John, we got 1 minute, so go ahead.
Go ahead. These are stretching exercises, you know, that I worked out with a physical therapist that you can do at your kitchen island. And just to stay stretched and limber and that kind of thing, and may not give it sort of a fun name, the island workout at all.
I appreciate, you know, your add-in onto the program. We're coming up to a break. When we come back, we'll give you some very specific data on what you can do and how you can help yourself. It's important that you become proactive. It's important that you understand that this is not a time to be hysterical. It's a time to think and think properly and in systems. We'll be right back.
Washington's Mall, 105.9 FM, WMAL.
Welcome back, everybody. Dr. Tom Rozelle here. You've been listening to Dr. Tom Rozelle Live, as we do every Sunday, 11 a.m. Eastern Seaboard time. And tell your friends about the program. We've dedicated today to coronavirus because we want you to really understand what this is all about. We've talked about the fact that, you know, it's slightly more infectious than the ordinary flu. The death rate is a little higher, being closer to 1% overall now that the numbers are coming in, and the flu is just under 1%. Some estimates take it down to 0.4 of 1%. It takes it, some others take it much higher than that. But at the end of the day, look, this has many different ramifications. Economically, it's causing huge problems. Think about the fact that, you know, you have so many hundreds of thousands of people that are being affected with influenza deaths on an annual basis, and millions of people coming down with the flu across the globe. You add this to it, and the economic impact is unbelievable. So there's that piece. And so because of that, we can say, all right, that's why we're locking down the population. We don't want this thing to spread. We don't want it to be worse. But at the end of the day, it's problematic. But what we don't want you to do, and the point we're trying to make, is do not react. Think. There's things that you can do to help yourself. There's things that you can modify in your lifestyle. But, you know, even the Japanese right now have put their kids back to school. They said, we cannot continue living like this because we're making our society worse. And that seems to be the overall element when people are actually thinking through this process.
Well, a good idea is, when anytime you have some stress like this, write some ideas down. Write them down. Have an A, B, and C, possibility. And the thing is fear is unknown. Make it known. Make sure you have something in place. You have a strategy in place. An A would be the best thing. B would be probably most likely. C would be the worst case scenario. But at least write it down. Put it off. Get it off your chest. Journal it a little bit. It might work out really well. I would get like a 5-subject notebook, because each subject would be.
That'd be a great idea.
Maybe like you might have problems with your wife or whatever, or your husband or whatever.
Don't go there, Scott.
Okay, I know. Okay. But different subjects that might be good to be able to, as a possibility. Write it out, get it out, plan it out. It takes, the fear is in the unknown.
It's an important process, thinking. It's an important process of taking proper action steps, but it can't be based on fear or knee-jerk reactions. This virus will ultimately move forward and be eliminated, and it's going to mutate, and it's going to be back, just like the swine flu has mutated, and it's around us all the time. It's there. As I said earlier in the program, coronaviruses have been with us for a long time, and they affect the body in many different ways. Your flus mostly are coronaviruses. This one is one that affects the respiratory system, and subsequently, again, to recap just a little bit, that's why it's so deadly, is because there are so many older people that have compromised respiratory problems. But like any virus, there are things that can be useful, from high levels of vitamin C and vitamin D and a good probiotic. It goes on. We're using
water,
zinc.
Water, water, water.
Water, water, water. We're using quercetin. We can help you. Even if you're not a patient, give us a call and talk to one of our professionals, and they'll ask you some questions. And if we can put you in the right direction and help you with these things, we'll be glad to do that with you. We're in the office every day. We're treating our patients. We're taking care of them. We're taking all the precautions that we need to take. Mm-hmm. That's what it's all about, Dr. Scott.
It is. Just take a chill pill.
It really, take a breath. You know, there's an app called Breathe. There's another one called Calm. But get outside. Go for a walk. Enjoy the day. You don't have to snuzzle up. But I'll make a prediction before we're off the air. There are going to be a lot of Christmas babies coming up.
There you go.
Yeah, that's what happens when you get too close for too long.
There's a boom for economy.
I know. We're coming up to the end of the program. Remember, we love you all. Bye.